Welcome to Divorce Dialogues. I'm Catherine Miller. Divorce Dialogues brings expert guests to the airways to talk through your divorce questions and fill in the gray areas about separating. From thinking about divorce, to how to behave during divorce, to what to do after, this is Divorce Dialogues. Welcome to Divorce Dialogues. I'm Catherine Miller. I'm the founder of the Miller Law Group and a trainer at the Center for Understanding in Conflict, and I am on a mission to change how people divorce and help them divorce with dignity. My guest today is Jennifer Lee. Jennifer is the founder of Modern Wealth, a Sarasota-based financial firm with a focus on helping individuals experiencing transition, which divorce certainly is. Jennifer provides a fresh perspective to the financial planning process by digging deep to understand what drives her clients. And as part of their process, they encourage clients to communicate their values to the most important people in their lives by writing a family love letter. This led her to write Squeeze the Juice, Live with Purpose, and Then Leave a Legacy. Welcome, Jennifer Lee, to Divorce Dialogues. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
And before we get started talking about the money, I'm really, really intrigued by the family love letter idea. And I know that a lot of financial planners are talk about taking care of your family with finances and all of that stuff, leaving the love kind of implicit in the plan and often unrecognized by the people, the beloveds, the people who are the reason why people are making a financial plan other than just for security in old age, right? And I just wanted to say that one of my daughters asked for a love letter when I asked her to change rooms. And make no mistake, she was well launched with her own apartment when I asked her to change rooms. This was not really, I didn't think, a huge thing. But she said one thing that would make her feel better was for me to write her as her mother a love letter. And you know what, Jennifer? It was easy and it was also hard because I love her so much, as I do all my kids. I was so worried about leaving something out. So what is the experience of your clients and the family love letter financial plan process? Talk to me about that.
Well, I think you're in a unique position being an attorney. Words come more easily for you. So the average person, it's difficult, right? It's difficult to get that down on paper and, communicate what is so important about that relationship you have with that child. What do you want for them? And it depends on how old they are too. If your kids are little and you want to communicate what you hope for them and expect for them in the future, because God forbid something happened to you, you would never be able to take them to the senior prom and see them through that process or help them figure out the person that they're going to marry and tell them your hopes and dreams for the quality of life that they'll have and how they're going to contribute to society. All these things, these are your values. These are your unique family contributions. So, we like to, as an advisor, advisors, attorneys, therapists, we're a dime a dozen, right? So there's plenty of people out there. So I like to have a deeper, more rich conversation with my clients and really understand what makes them tick, what's important to them, what's important for them from a legacy perspective, because that's going to help cultivate how I'm going to facilitate their dreams, right? And use their money as a tool to help them accomplish those things.
Yeah. I think it's so powerful what you say that using the money as a tool, because sometimes I think in our society, we think of money as the goal rather than a tool to reach the goal. And in some ways, I think it's that people feel like, well, if I had the money, then I'll be happy. If I had the money, then I can do all the things that I want to do. That doesn't actually work. You actually have to allocate it.
Yeah. Right? And you really should start backwards. You should start about, I always talk about financial planning as simple. What do you have? What is your income? What are your assets? What are your resources? What other potential future inheritance, business, et cetera, you have? And then what do you want? The what do you want is harder. Right? It's harder because I can't make that up for you. You have to tell me what do I want? You say, oh, I want financial freedom. Well, what does that mean to you? That means I don't have to work. Well, but you love to work. So, what does that really mean to you? So we have to really dig into it and say, what does that really translate for you? Is it, you know, that you can take 2 months off and go to Europe? Is it that you can send your kids to private school? Is it beyond that? Is it legacy for great, great grandchildren? What's important to you? And the love letter talking about, it's not just, I mean, I love that your daughter asked you to do that. That's amazing. And that you did it. And how many kids do you have? You probably had to write multiple love letters.
Well, I have five, and
oh my goodness, right?
And so I haven't written the rest of them yet, and they haven't asked, but I feel the obligation to do it. And I also feel the desire, Jennifer, to do it. Yeah. And yet it's still, I think about it all the time when I, you know, I make a little notes to myself, what goes in, you know, this kid's love letter and what goes in that kid's love letter? Because as you know, all of our kids are so unique, surprisingly, and each of them brings their own special sauce to the table and to the family. And there's so many, you know, ways in which that is such a benefit to me.
Yeah. So our family love letter, the way that it was disseminated with our family is my father was an advisor for many years and, you know, always liked to plan ahead. But, you know, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and it was, you know, if you're going to get a brain tumor, it was the worst kind. And then it was 4B. So it was the worst of the worst, right? He knew that this was not, he was not long for this earth. And we had a family vacation very shortly after his diagnosis. And, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, he called us. My sister comes into my room at the vacation and says, you want to come on the deck? And I said, what time is it? She said, 6 a.m. I said, what am I doing on the deck? Said, Dad wants to talk about, I have a family meeting, right? And so he delivered his love letter to us about his assets, about his values, about who he wanted to sing at his funeral, who he wanted to give his eulogy, the people who were influenced his life, what his expectations of us as his children were. I mean, it was intense.
Oh my gosh.
And talked about, you know, here's what your mom has. Here are her assets. I'm going to pay off this mortgage. So that house will be free and clear. She'll have this much in retirement. I've got life insurance. Boom, 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 boom. He said, started it with, and we never talk about money, but I want to tell you what's going to happen. And the cutest thing was he said, you know, and your mother is never, ever to use her Visa when we go out to dinner. So, you know, we're always like pulling the Visa out fast and sometimes she tricks us. But, you know, that was an incredible experience. And not everybody's going to do that in person. Not everybody's going to have the opportunity. You know, he could have been hit by a bus. And so you have that ability to plan. And I think it puts money in perspective and it helps people really be clear on what they want for themselves, what they want for their family. And it allows me to better facilitate. And I'm sure you, an attorney, to facilitate the divorce, the transition, you know, do you really want the house? Why do you want the house? You know, and we can help them really understand things.
I'm Catherine Miller, and you're listening to Divorce Dialogues, a podcast dedicated to educating people about divorce-related topics so everyone can divorce with dignity. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to be sure you don't miss an episode. And I'm talking today with Jennifer Lee about divorce and financial planning, or really financial planning around all transitions. But let's talk about divorce, Jennifer. I think that when people are going through the divorce experience, they have so many financial concerns, and it's really in all different kinds of ways. Am I going to be able to stay in my home? Do I want to stay in my home? Am I going to be able to maintain my lifestyle, drive this car? Do I have to move? Will my kids be able to go to college or the colleges of their choice? You know, what does this mean about me as a divorced person? Do I now not get to belong to the club, or am I going to have to change jobs? You know, there are all kinds of things that go on. So from your perspective, as a financial expert, what are some common concerns for these, for people going through the divorce experience, and how do you help them kind of think it through?
Sure. You named quite a few of them. I'll say the biggest component that I run across is anxiety around money, period. I work a lot with what I call the non-moneyed party. So it's the person in the divorce who isn't the person who necessarily handles the money. doesn't mean they don't know what the assets are, doesn't mean they aren't able to intellectually capable of understanding it. It's just not their aptitude, nor has been their historic interest. So there's a lot of education around the process and understanding what your financial picture looks like today together as a couple, and then what it's going to look like in reality after divorce. And I think it's a reconciliation of that. And that's where the values come in as well, because a lot of people, the default, a lot of women, the default is I'll stay in the marital home. Well, we need to understand if that's going to make you cash poor or if that's where you want to be. You know, that's been a space you've been in 20 years, and maybe it has some negative connotations. So it's thinking through a lot of the different components. And then it's understanding after you've filed and your attorney comes back to you and wants to get an allocation of assets and the marital balance sheet, it gets intimidating. I have a lot of people who will come to me and say, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here, and I'm overwhelmed. And okay, so we'll go through that and talk through those assets and understand how much is in retirement. And do you trade the investment property or the beach house for IRAs? And what's the tax implications of those things? And it's a negotiation. I think the biggest thing for me, which makes me crazy, is anybody leaving money on the table. I always advise clients to get clarification from their attorney about what they can expect in a best case scenario to get post-divorce. And then we work backwards from there, right? We try to, if we can negotiate almost all of that or most of that, let's do it. And I think it gets a little bit contentious if you have a spouse who is, you know, a little bit more aggressive in the divorce process. So that's where you really got to lean on the legal community.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jennifer, I think that it's not really a zero-sum game, because some assets have more value to one person or the other, right? There are things that are worth money but aren't money, right?
Yep.
There are things that are worth money not on an open market, but are worth money, like what I call the price of freedom, right? If it costs you a few bucks to be done and not pay me and not continue, forget paying me or anybody, the lawyers at all, but just the agony of going of the unknown and getting through it. On the other hand, sometimes people are in a rush to get it over with, and that's a mistake, right? They're going to make a huge mistake. And my experience is that when people really push to get this done too fast in a negotiation, the person pushing usually regrets it, because they have a value that kind of dissipates over time in being done. And that's also something, you know, where money comes into the negotiation. I'll pay more, I'll take less just to get this over with. And one thing that I see my role as the attorney is to be a kind of reality check on that. And I would imagine that's true for you. Is that true?
So I'm shaking my head the entire time. It's absolutely true, everything that you're saying. And that's really what, and I agree with the emotional exchange for money. I use that in a lot of different scenarios. I was just in St. John with my brother-in-law, and he's looking at this house on the mountain, and he wants to buy it. And I know that he could afford it. We're talking about it. And he's like, yeah, but you know, the economics of it. I said, look, we can put it on paper, and maybe there's a $500,000 difference here, and that's your emotional need to have it. So if it's worth $500,000 to you to just say, I own a house here, do it, right? There's an exchange and a number that you have to reconcile as you're negotiating through these things to say, you know, I don't care that much about, you know, his car. He can have that, or he can have whatever the item is, because you just want it done. But you're exactly right. In the beginning, I don't like you just to give in and give up too quickly, because, you know, you're in a marriage, you're entitled to half. Let's really understand what you're entitled to. And don't leave that on the table just because you were having an emotional moment, right? That's why it takes a village to get through a divorce. Yeah. You know,
it's hard. It really
is. It is. It is.
It really, it's so pervasive in your entire life, right? It's your identity. It's your home. It's who you spend time with during every single day. It's how you identify in the world. I mean, there's so many things that are wrapped up in the family unit. And I like to think of it as transitioning that unit rather than ending it to something that just looks a little different, but that there's just no way just to breeze through it and think, all right, this is easy, even if it's something you want.
Yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right.
I want to remind people that I'm Catherine Miller and that you're listening to Divorce Dialogues. And I'm talking with Jennifer Lee about her experiences as a financial planner for people going through divorce and also about your book. And Jennifer, I'm a little torn because I want to talk about the book. And I also want to give you the opportunity to tell people where to learn more about you and learn about the book. So why don't we do that now? And then we can remind people after we talk about the book where they could get it.
Sure. Well, I have a website. It's called modern and then a hyphen and the word wealth.com. That's my financial planning website. And then my book is called Squeeze the Juice. And the website is squeezethejuicebook.com. But what is it that you want me to share about the book?
Tell me a little bit more about what your experience is about what led you to write the book. Let's start there.
Yeah. So I wrote the book during COVID, and I guess I had a little extra time on my hands in the morning because I wasn't going back and forth and putting makeup on and all those good things for work. But there are a lot of lessons in life. And, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm sure you could write a book in a minute about your experiences with regard to working with people in divorce. But as an advisor, you know, I like to work with the non-moneyed party and educate them and get them comfortable with money. Like as a kid, I counted coins. I had six different jobs. I've always been entrepreneurial. I'm comfortable with money. We could talk about it all day long. It's no trouble if you want to call me up on a weekend and say, hey, can you tell me about this? I'm excited to talk about it. A little nerdy, but I'm excited to talk about it. And most people get so uncomfortable with the subject that I wanted to try to educate them about money in a way that they could absorb it and not feel threatened by it. So I incorporated that in writing your family love letter. So I start the book talking about my dad's story and him communicating his love letter to us, his kids, and my mom, his wife. And then I talk about different concepts through the book. And then at the end, I share my love letter and explain why I say certain things. So in my love letter, I say, you know, don't spend the principal, you know, live on the earnings. If the nieces and nephews want something, don't give them, you know, $100,000, but invest in their future and help them build a business. So I'm educating my partner about what I want to have happen, but I'm also explaining to the reader why I'm doing those things. You know, okay, so I have life insurance. This is the kind of life insurance I have. Here's why. And here's, you know, there's a variety of different kinds. It depends, right? It depends on your situation. It depends on your health scenario. The big picture concept is how do you get the most out of an experience, a trip, this conversation, you know, a conversation with your child on the way back from soccer practice, you know, squeeze the juice out of life and get the good stuff. So the book is story driven, and hopefully I like to say it doesn't hurt to read it. You know, it's not a painful read for somebody who says, oh, it's a finance book. Well, no, it's really stories. And, you know, at the end, I promise you'll have learned something that you can apply in your life, and hopefully it won't hurt.
That's good, because I think that talking about money, a lot of people have a lot of shame about money. That's my experience. What do you think?
I like to talk about understanding your money story. So a lot of times, and there's definitely shame around money, but it depends, right? What is the history? What is the story about money? What is your experience? I met a young lady recently who has, you know, she's 38 years old. She's got a thriving business, a husband who's employed and a couple kids, and she has all this money in cash. And I said, what do you do? Like, what are you doing? You need to be investing it. Even if it's moderately invested, it needs to be invested. You don't need this money. Well, you don't understand. You know, my dad was a gambler. He'd make really big money and then he'd lose money and we'd lose the house, right? That's her money story. So you have to understand where somebody's coming from to be able to give them advice and encourage them along. I'm never going to get her to be, you know, 100% aggressively invested. And that's fine. But now I understand why. And maybe I can get some of it invested to help her and her family for the future. So I think it depends on what their experience was with money.
Well, so for people going through divorce specifically, what parts of the book would you recommend that they highlight? What would you highlight for them?
So the book and divorce in general, it's really more about providing advice and context around money. Okay. So there's a couple chapters that I always start with. And one is financial planning is simple. It's literally, what do you have and what do you want? Because we need to know, what are your assets and what are you trying to accomplish? Where do you want to live in your divorce? Where, you know, what do you want to make sure you have for your kids? All of these things. What kind of income will you need? And we can understand what you have and your resources and help you get to where you want to be. That's number one. And then the second one, I think that's pretty important, is understanding what you have at your discretion. A lot of people, we make a good living, our spouse makes a good living, we have a nice lifestyle. We are just not paying attention to where the money's going. And if it's all flowing in, that's great. When you need to, you know, a lot of times people will wake up more in their 50s and go, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to retire in 10 years. I need to get it together. I call that crunch time. They really panic, and I love it because we can really get serious about their planning. But then they're looking at what do they have and how is that going to replace their income in retirement or in divorce, right? So understanding what you have at your discretion is kind of important in looking at, you know, how you're going to live your life post-divorce.
Yeah. And, you know, you've talked, Jennifer, a lot about the non-moneyed spouse. So, you know, just for our listeners, it's not a person without money, right?
Oh, sure.
So why don't you just explain what you mean by that?
No, I appreciate you clarifying that. No, it's definitely somebody who has access to money, but it's the person who says, oh, you know, my husband handles that. Or, yeah, I go to a meeting once a year with the advisor, but I don't really, you know, I don't know what we have. I mean, I have clients who, you know, still to this day, most of them, after about the third meeting, they'll be like, okay, you know, don't explain that to me again. I get it. And I understand it now. But some of them don't pay any attention to it still. They go, that's why I have you, right? I'm just dependent and relying on you. They just switch from their spouse to me, which is okay. But I want you to feel empowered and feel like you understand and have a grip on what your direction is, because that drives your life and your future. And I'm happy to guide the train, but tell me where we're going.
I love that. Well, I think that my experience is that people who are the non-moneyed spouse, someone who didn't earn the money, right? Maybe they actually had an inheritance, but they have relied on their spouse or an advisor to guide them. Then they're not really owning having money. And that those people often have a lot of fear about messing it up, or, and a lot of fear sometimes that the spouse who is money cognizant, money aware, who's been focused on the money, has so much power in the relationship because of that understanding about money. And that creates a sense of power and balance in the negotiation, and that someone like you and someone like me can come in to counterbalance a little bit of that sense of disempowerment. And I wonder how you think about that and if that's something you've helped people with.
You are spot on. And that is the importance of a good attorney, a good advisor, a good consigliere, whatever it is. It's somebody to help you clarify and see your value. I spoke with a woman this morning, and she's talking to an attorney, and she's getting ready to file. And she says, you know, her husband's a CPA. She's a doctor. She makes money. But she's still non-moneyed. Because right. She doesn't pay attention to it. She's not on all the accounts. And she says, well, I kind of feel like that's his business. And I said, okay, well, did he have that when you got married? Well, no. When we got married, you know, I was the breadwinner. I was like, so you invested in your family and in his business. It's half yours. Like, let's, you know, we need to get clarity there. You need to talk to your attorney about these things. But she said, I wasn't even wrapping my head around the fact that that's mine too. I said, well, as a family unit, you brought your job and your career to the family. He brought his job in his career, which is managing these properties, to the family that's together. So you need to look at it as a whole component. And I think, you know, she said to me on multiple occasions in this call that his walking around money intimidates her, right? He's a CPA. He knows it. He's articulating himself well. And it feels like pressure. Like, it's not yours, it's mine. And she doesn't know any better. So I said, you got to go to your attorney and you got to ask those questions and get a solid foundation for what you're entitled to and really get clarity on the picture.
Absolutely. And it's so funny. You're talking about a doctor, right? Obviously a super smart person. This isn't about education. It's not about intelligence. It's not about ability. It's about where you're focusing your attention.
And that, absolutely.
And that this woman obviously could focus her attention on the money and get up to speed enough, probably pretty darn quickly, if she had the confidence to do that. So great.
Yeah.
So Jennifer Lee, we're almost out of time. Before we end, what is your favorite section of the book?
Well, I think, you know, probably my favorite section is the juice, if you will. It's the love letter in the beginning. It's the story that kind of pulls you in and gives you perspective on taking care of your family. I think for me, that's part of my value system is doing the right thing. You know, whether you're going through divorce or you're happily married, it's taking care of your people, whoever those people are. So I love that part.
Great. Jennifer Lee, thank you so much for being my guest on Divorce Dialogues. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Catherine.